I think we're on Skype.
I think we are.
Okay, I'm going to hang up the phone.
Okay, and I'll hang it up too.
All right. I think I'm okay.
Persistence and determination, onward and upward.
Let me, you did it. I'm totally amazed. Let me try to get Stephen on here too.
Okay.
And I think if it's okay with you, I'll just record it since it's a miracle. We don't want to lose the miracle.
Well, I think you were the key there. You said capital M-A-R-K-S-N-I-D-E-R. With I didn't realize that you played a guitar.
Yeah. That's my other self or whatever you want to call it, my other personality. Or...
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. I that's wonderful.
Yeah, no space between K and S.
Okay, well, that's it.
That was the key the whole time. And we'll let, from now on, you call us. How's that?
I can do that.
So how long was your bike trip this year?
Well, this summer was a separation. In June, I did almost 2,000-mile-plus motorcycle trip through four states, Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona, and, of course, Utah, and saw, I don't know, all the monuments, Grand Canyon, Arches, Canyonlands, Bryce, Zion, Bandelier down in New Mexico, of course, Sedona, you name it. Just had a blast. And then came back and then bicycled in Yellowstone Glacier and Grand Tetons. And that was the month of July. And then in August, we took off in a van. We rented a van and slept in the van, because it doesn't cost anything, and just have our sleeping bags and air mattresses. And we went to Georgia, Nashville, Grand Ole Opry, Springer Mountain, hiked some of the Appalachia Trail, traveled up the Blue Ridge Parkway through all those states. I think we did 28 states altogether, and ended up in Pennsylvania on the Blue Ridge Skyline Drive. Front Royal, and then up to the Gettysburg Battlefield. And it was really cool to stand on the spot where Lincoln gave his Gettysburg Address November 19th of 1863, the most famous speech of any president of all time, and it was only 2 minutes. And you met tons of people, got in conversation with a lot of people at a safe distance with my mask on. And we really got to see America this summer, which I love to do because I love to travel. And and then got back, did a bicycle trip mid-15th, all the way 6 days in September through the leaf changes, all the way to Aspen, which I do every year. It's about 220 miles altogether, six passes, highest one, and most of them are between 10 and 12,000 feet. And then got back and did a backpack trip up to 11,000-foot lake called Magic Lake in the Mount Holy Cross region. And then got to see all the colorful trees. And you walk along golden leaves and a trail that's just filled with golden leaves to a beautiful lake that you can see the trout hit your dry fly when you are fly fishing for trout there on Magic Lake. And it's about maybe 200 yards across and another 150 yards wide, and it's completely surrounded by pine trees. And then right behind it is Mount Whitney at 13,200, which we've climbed also. So yeah, anyway, that was the summer. And now I'm working on these two books, When Your Father Died Too Soon and America's Overpopulation Predicament Blindsiding Future Generations. So yeah, anyway, that pretty much sums it up.
So you were on a motorcycle and on a bicycle?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the trip out to the Blue Ridge Skyline Drive, it's a total of 600 miles.
Wow.
And Blue Ridge Skyline Drive, and then, of course, the Blue Ridge Parkway, Mabry Mill. You go right along the Appalachia Trail. We hiked portions of the Appalachia Trail all the way up until we got into Virginia and then off into Pennsylvania, and we got Appomattox. We saw all the different war places where the battlefields were, like Appomattox and so forth. Very, very touching, very emotional for me. Actually, found myself with tears standing there where Abraham Lincoln stood, like I say, on November 19th, 1863.
So how long were you hiking on the Appalachian Trail?
Well, we just did portions of it. We were out there a month, August, and so we did, and really one of the cool things was we were on it was called Gell's Nap, or I think it was Gell's Nap. And it's an indent in the mountain and the chain there. Of course, we went to Mount Mitchell, which is the highest mountain east of the Mississippi, 6,684 feet, Mount Mitchell. We hiked up to the top of that. But anyway, you know, the Appalachian Trail is about 2,190 miles, and hundreds and thousands of people have hiked it. And at Nell's Gap, they have a camp place there, and sleeping bags, I mean, boots, and you name it. They got everything you need, food and so forth. But in the tree, from the people who come down from Mount Katahdin in Maine, where they start up there, they start there and finish on Springer Mountain in Georgia. There was a couple of trees, and in the trees there must be a couple hundred pairs of hiking boots tied together by the shoelaces. And when they finished their hike on the Appalachian Trail, they throw their boots with great glee up into the tree. So the poor tree is sitting there hanging with all these boots hanging down by the shoelaces. So anyway, it was pretty hilarious, and I got some great shots of it.
I talked to a guy that used to do that a long time ago, walk that trail, and he says you can wear out a pair of boots while you're walking.
Oh, yeah. You absolutely, because it's a lot of rough rock. You know, amazingly enough, too, it was a lady named, I think her name was, Nell or something. But anyway, at 67, she was the first woman to thru-hike the Appalachian Trail. 67, she packed it with a pack.
Man, I tell you, that takes a lot of courage.
Takes a lot of courage, you know. And the one thing about the Appalachian Trail, I've been backpacking all my life. I've backpacked in the Himalayas. I've backpacked in the Andes. I've backpacked in the Blue Mountains of Australia. I've certainly backpacked the Rocky Mountains. I've backpacked in Alaska. And one of the things that I like about backpacking, I've backpacked the Colorado Trail. That's 489 miles, but it's an average of 10,000 feet. And it's rough going. But the one thing about the Appalachian Trail, called the AT by those who pack it, is the fact that it's just a tunnel of green. So essentially you are in a tunnel of green. And I would say that it doesn't get that exciting until maybe late September, when the trees all turn extraordinary colors all the way up and down the Appalachian Trail. And so if you happen to hit it at that point, then you would get to go through all this incredible yellow, gold, topaz, bronze, pink, you know, red, crimson, and so forth. But other than that, it's a tunnel of green. And, that's why, for me, I have not really got excited. I'd rather do the Pacific Coast Trail. That's 2,500 miles long, down from Mexico up to Canada. And but the venue is just exquisite, because you get all these exquisite mountains and passes and sierras and you name it. It's pretty fantastic. So anyway, it's just personal preference, but I know there are thousands and thousands of people who have packed the AT, and they just say they loved every second of it. So it just depends on your style.
Did you see any fires this year at all?
Wow. Yeah, actually, we have, Colorado's burning right now. They've got a 4,000 acre fire, just, north of us right now. North of in Lyons, which I've bicycled for years. I've bicycled through Lyons all the way up to Rocky Mountain National Park and Estes Park. And then about 4,000 acres were burned just on the other side of Estes Park in the last week. And I, for anyone who remembers, in 2017, I bicycled across Montana's 260,000 square mile. It was a wildfire. It was a plain, you know, the Great Plains. And we actually, we were in most of the day we were in smoke and fire coming down to the road, and everything scorched and black of 360 degrees. So I've been in bushfires in Australia too. I thought the world was coming to an end. So I've had my fill of fires, and they just choke your lungs, and you can't wait to get to some fresh air. But this summer, just here in Colorado, the smoke's just pouring over our house, actually. So I've certainly been matched up with some fires in the last couple of years.
Some of these fires are arson too, aren't they?
Oh yes, they are. No question. There's some devious characters. As a matter of fact, when I bicycled the coast in 2018, the West Coast, Canada, New Mexico, with a couple of friends plus my wife Sandy, which actually resulted in a book. It's titled Zen Between Two Bicycle Wheels, Eat, Pedal, Sleep. It just came out in June and published in June. But we got to see fires in Oregon and in Washington State and also in California. It's really, I can say this, I think in the last 3 years, about 12 million trees have died from drought in Northern California, and the grass is completely gold everywhere. It's just completely brown because there's no green grass, and the only green is the trees that are hardy enough to withstand the heat and the drought. So California's got some really, really big problems, but also eastern Oregon and eastern Washington State, where it's just dry as a bone. So yeah, there's some big problems. And I think right now we are in Colorado, we're in a level 2 drought ourselves. We haven't seen a stitch of rain in the last, I don't know, 6 weeks or so.
Are we going to see a contested election this year?
Boy, oh boy, Mark, this is the hardest election. First of all, I don't think anyone trusts the polls,
right?
Because the polls have never been correct, and they just keep telling all sorts of falsified stories about who or whom is going to vote for whom. And so at this point, it could be a landslide. It depends on what people are looking for, because I just did a piece on Joe Biden this week, and it was about a lifetime of corruption and malfeasance. And if you do any study of Joe Biden's platform, he's a man who will take away your guns. He's a man who will open up the borders. He'll tear down the walls. He'll give amnesty to 20 million plus illegal aliens in our country, and he'll expand all the Medicaid and Medicare for all those illegal aliens. They will make them all voters. He was going to tear down any wall that's even, I think, 400 miles of wall on the border of Mexico, and literally welcome anyone into our country. One of the other things that's most disturbing about him is he's going to have Muslims at every level of his administration. And I made a point that in this piece on his malfeasance, Joe Biden, Barack Obama actually had 10 top Muslims in the White House in a prayer room for them. And one of them was a guy named Muhammad Majid, M-A-G-I-D. You can look him up. And he was the Sharia czar, if you will, in the United States White House. I mean, the White House. He was, you know, in so much power. And his job was to bring Sharia law and advocate for Sharia law all over the United States during the Obama administration. Of course, we all know now that Obama is a Muslim and that he wanted to bring Sharia law to our country. And I have to share this with you, that I've read the Quran. It is one of the most barbaric books ever created by any human being. Voltaire just scorched it. Winston Churchill who just said, this is one of the most idiotic religions on the planet because it's so violent. And many other, I can quote 20 other top historical people who just said, my God, the Quran is a very, very dangerous book. But if we had the Quran and we had Sharia law in America, we would immediately lose women's rights, children's rights, animal rights, choice of religion, choice of dress, choice of spouse. free speech would be completely obliterated. So you have to ask yourself, do you want a man like Joe Biden in the White House who would absolutely be an antithesis to the U.S. Constitution? Because the U.S. Constitution states women's rights, voter rights, children's rights, animal rights, human rights, human choice for religion, choice of spouse, choice of dress. We have all these rights in this country. And if Joe Biden got his way, we would start to slowly, if not quickly, eat away at all those rights and install Sharia law, because that's what Muslims are in this country to do. So you've got all of that, and then you've got the bombastic and the narcissistic and the tweeting President Trump, who sometimes seems to run off the rails. And yet he is also an all-American guy, and he's doing the best he can to work for this country, because he's all-American, and he's steadfastly American. He's pro-police. He's certainly pro-military, and thankfully he's pro-law and order. And whereas somebody like Kamala Harris, she actually touted more violence. She actually said, we need more of it. I saw the quote on her. She was on a video, on an interview. And we don't need more violence. We don't. I can tell you, I went to some of the cities who had all this violence, and they had the statues torn down. I was in Asheville, North Carolina. That's the Vanderbilt house there, the 179,000 square foot Vanderbilt house that was built in 1904 or so. First house with electricity. It's 179,000 square feet, so it's not a house. It's a mansion. Yeah, I can repeat that. 179,000 square feet, the Vanderbilt house. And it's right there in Asheville, North Carolina. Anyway,
pretty nice. Very nice.
Way beyond nice. I mean, to walk in there, the guy who was the architect was an absolute genius. I've been to many mansions and many castles around the world, and probably the most ornate and the most elegant and the most beautiful and the most ornamental is the Vanderbilt house.
It has an amazing garden, doesn't it? Beautiful garden.
Oh, the gardens and the pools. I think in today's money it would cost $400 million to build the thing. $400 million. You know, I've seen a Hearst Castle out there in San Simeon, just south of Monterey, California, by William Randolph Hearst. And that has 148 rooms, and it's got two massive pools indoors, got statues, it's got ceilings. Every ceiling is a different one from Europe by different artists. And that castle is amazing. In fact, in William Randolph Hearst's time, he actually went after the presidency against Teddy Roosevelt and lost. But he was a House member. But he never participated. Never went to the House of Representatives to do anything. But anyway, in Asheville, you could see where they busted up everything, and they had to put a giant wooden cage around the statue, and I forget what statue it was, but then they had Black Lives Matter murals on the streets, and I also saw some of the towns where they had bashed in windows and looted stores. So, yeah, some of this stuff that was going on by Antifa and the Black Lives Matter, it was a total of $1 billion minimum, and some figures say that the final tabulation will be something like $2 billion. The looting and the damage done by Black Lives Matter and Antifa. So we've got some real anarchists in this country. And amazingly enough to me is the fact that the U.S. Constitution was the first constitution that left the amendments to free the slaves. And so, you know, the African Americans got to be free right there in 1865 or sooner from the Emancipation Proclamation. And we're the first country to ever do it. And slavery had been a part of the world, is, you know, situation since the Romans and every great civilization, the Egyptians and the Chinese. I think 1 million Chinese died being slaves to building the wall of China. And I got to walk on it, back when I was younger in my travels. So anyway, one of the things we ought to be praising is the founders to give give the freedom to all people of all colors and all religions and all ethnic groups to have extraordinary freedom, because and also choices, because there's just, you know, no one has, the U.S. Constitution is the most copied document for governance around the globe. It is the foundation for all the democracies and all the republics that are out there right now. And for these anarchists, BLM and Black Panthers and BLM and Antifa and Boogaloo and God knows what else, they want to destroy that, except they get to enjoy all the rights and privileges of demonstrations and so forth to change it. And they could change it by running for governor, running for a senator, running for any house member or mayor or any other selected governance, so that they could change from within. You know, if they don't want to have those statues, whatever it may be, which I would say that we need to have our history, good and bad, warts and all, so we know and remember exactly what happened, instead of whitewashing it. But if you're going to do that, do it within the system, not through violence and not through looting and not through the kind of devastating firebombing and all that goes with that, that we've seen since Floyd event there in Minneapolis. So, anyway, it was quite a enlightening summer, especially talking to a lot of people.
So these anarchists, some of them are paid by George Soros. Do you think George Soros is trying to create a civil war in the U.S.?
You know, it depends on, you know, it could be George Soros. It could be other individuals of the like-mindedness that are really trying to destroy the United States of America. In the end, I think even George Soros, who really could, I think he's 84 years old, so he could be dead here just about any second. But the thing is, or what I see, is that the American people want to preserve this country. And I think most Black people and white people and brown people here in America, I got to tell you, I've traveled all over the world. I can tell you, you want to go to Africa? Guess what? I don't see anybody immigrating to Africa for a better life. And I don't see them immigrating over to India for a better life. And I don't see anybody immigrating down to Mexico for a better life, other than to drink tequila on the beach there in Cancun, where you're protected with police escorts. Otherwise, you'd be in trouble, because it's not safe in Mexico, and for Americans, for sure.
Yes,
and so we really are so fortunate. And these thugs, if you will, these anarchists, personally, from my own standpoint, need to be arrested and prosecuted and jailed, so that they can learn some good citizenship, because they have nothing in place, nothing on the books to actually do something constructive. Because if BLM wanted to do something constructive, Black Lives Matter, it should do something in the ghettos. It should do something in the inner cities. It should do something to create. I mean, what would that $1 billion that they burned up and looted? What about teachers and teachers' classes? And then how about parenting classes? And, you know, 7 out of 10 African-American children are born without a father. How about, let's get some father role models. Let's get jobs for African-Americans in the inner cities that have a decent wage, a living wage, so that they can prosper instead of burning $1 billion+ up. Go in and become teachers in the ghetto or the inner city, however you want to call it, instead of looting and burning and destroying businesses that does nothing to further Black lives. Go into Chicago and stop the 50 shootings every weekend, and up to 14 lives on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday night in Chicago, which is about the norm. I mean, 50 shootings every weekend in Chicago.
Jeez.
I mean, it's pretty much the average. Wow. And you wonder, why can't these people just talk it out? You know, instead of confronting each other with a gun and shooting each other, just talk it out. So you're both left alive and you can go about your business. instead of being deader than a doornail. So yeah. Anyway, that's some of the stuff that I got to see this summer, and I'm hoping that calmer minds, you know, and also I know the question you might be asking is if this thing goes Trump's way, we're going to see unbelievable anarchy.
Right. Exactly.
And I think probably because these anarchists have been so emboldened because they haven't been corralled, that we might see a great deal of anarchy. And if people don't want the whole Biden-Harris shtick, if you will, and they come out, it could be quite another surprise vote, just like the Hillary Clinton loss, and Trump gets in there, even though he is such a bombastic tweeting kind of character. It could cause a lot of unlawful and certainly violence and so forth. But I'm in favor of absolutely crushing it with law and order and National Guard, because I want my country to thrive. And I know the 90% or 95% of Americans, black, white, and brown, want our country to survive and to thrive, not to be torn apart. Do I make sense?
You make perfect sense, Frosty. I tell you what, it's been great getting in touch with you finally.
Yeah.
Let's save the rest of this for part two. I think we're going to do a show on the 28th.
Okay.
Stephen, you got to remind me. We'll do it at the same time. And maybe I'll call you on the phone first. And it's Mark, SNIDER, with no space in between. And we'll try it on Skype again. See you later.
All the best. Safe. Be safe. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, Mark.
Bye-bye.
Nice hearing from you.